Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
Aloha, my friend.
Aloha. We have to come up with a name for California. You know how we say aloha for Hawaii? We have to come up with something for when you're in California, not aloha. We've got to make up a name, huh?
It's the greeting.
Make up
California.
A greeting.
The greeting officially in California is hola, which is Spanish for hello.
Oh, it is hola, huh? I didn't know that. Okay. Well, hola,
yeah,
hola.
Yeah, because we have, yeah, that's kind of, I always say aloha amigos oftentimes when I address people on an email who are in California and or Hawaii because trying to tie the two cultures together. But
oh, very good. Aloha amigos.
Yeah,
I'll have to remember. Yeah, I didn't realize that. Learn something new every day. I love it. So
California
hola over there. Aloha
hola.
From here, and we'll say salut, and we have to start running down the list and just greet everybody.
That would kind of be fun. That would actually be fun to do that, to write just what is hello in a bunch of languages, because as I look at our stats, we're heard literally around the world, and again, I want to congratulate you on becoming a featured blog talk radio show.
Oh, that's because of you, Randy, though, and you're awesome.
There's
so
a little,
thank you.
If you go to our show page, in fact, if you're listening right now, you're probably looking right at it, but there's a little, you know, like a little orange ribbon up there that says featured, which means literally that this show has been upgraded in the blog talk radio kind of mechanism where they promote more than other shows. And I think you said it last week. It's a function of us being here week in and week out, no matter what was going on in our lives, really.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like my life, I woke up the other day and thought, what would I do? I know when I you know, I'm very funny about words and the power of words, and the Bible teaches us we have to be careful what we say. I woke up the other day and I thought, because I feel like I've been gone for 5 years. I haven't been gone for 5 years, you know, and everything. And between the ulnar nerve surgery, my hands, and my brother dying, breaking my leg. I mean, trials and tribulations that, you know, we have day-to-day issues always. But I woke up the other day and I thought, oh, my goodness, I have to get so many things back on track. And then I thought, okay, what would you do if you had been in a coma for 5 years and you woke up? And again, I want to take that word out because, you know, I'm about our powers of our speech. And you woke up and said, okay, what do I do? And it's like you start from today, right? That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking. So thank you, Randy. But I owe you. You're the reason that the show's so successful, and all your years and years of experience. And you're such a pro. And I really appreciate you. So thank you very much.
And group hug. Group hug across the water.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, really.
Well, let me.
Oh, gosh.
I'm excited about. Of course, the first half, as always, we talk real estate nuggets aplenty, and we're going to talk short sales today. In the second half, we're going to have Erica McNeil with us. And, you know, you and I have, in this past year, for a variety of reasons, as if anybody who listens regularly knows, kind of our story and our journey this past year or two. But the second half guest is a three-time cancer survivor, and she lost 7 children.
What?
Yeah. And so
oh, my gosh.
She wrote a book
no.
called Good Grief because she's obviously, like we have been doing, she's been processing her own grief over the years and has really kind of bounced back and is now, she's written this book called Good Grief, and she does workshops and seminars and travels and speaks, you know, and basically about how to help people.
Oh, Randy, I didn't know, because you brought her, I mean, you told me about their guest yesterday, you texted me, and I just, oh my goodness, good grief.
Yeah.
And seven children, she lost seven children, and the three-time cancer survivor.
Yeah, so she knows about grief, you know. And,
oh my goodness.
And so I think she'll be very inspirational for us, and obviously, you know, I'm excited about that, and I know it ties into both of our stories, and because guess what? You know, we talk about it, but my mom, who died when I was 9, there are times I still find myself grieving that. And it's so obviously I've, to a large extent, quote unquote, gotten over it, been healed, whatnot. But the grieving thing is forever. You know, it really is. It's just different levels.
It is forever. You know, because your life changes. Your life changes. It's a different type of normal, a different type of life. And so many things can trigger it and trigger it back. And wow, I can't wait to hear her on the next half. Anybody listening, if you'd like to call in, it's 347-945-5428. Mm-hmm. 347-945-5428. We have a lot of archive listeners, and our web address, of course, is you can go to radio@realityuniversal.com to email, or realityuniversal.com, realtyuniversal.com. Wow, I can't wait. And it's just, whoa. That's can't wait to hear her story.
Good.
No, it's heavy, what you just said. Mm. The first half of our show today, focusing on real estate, is if you've had a short sale in the last couple years and you want to buy a home, steps to be able to do that, and some different programs that are out there, how long you have to wait, et cetera. I know it's inundating right now, and when you've gone through a short sale or a bankruptcy, and lots of people we're seeing having to do, you know, you always want to check, if you're thinking of it, you really want to check with a good attorney and check out your options, check out bankruptcy, short sale, et cetera, because sometimes, for example, with short sales, there's tax ramifications, and they had a good law that, you know, to exclude that for residential owners, and many laws aren't being extended. If you're investors, that law wasn't in place. So you definitely want to check out your – because sometimes it makes sense to file a bankruptcy and then do the short sale, or maybe – you know, so there's just – you definitely want to check with an attorney, good accountant, before you just jump in and do any of the above, so that you're exploring your options and you're making a plan. Worst thing you can do is jump into the short sale and then not know about your ramifications and have a big tax implication a couple years later. So people that have already gone through the short sales, you've already done it, it's over, it's done, you can't change your mind now, and many short sales are great to do. I'm not saying to get you out of what you were in, so I'm not negating short sales. We just want people to get educated before you jump into it. So this show is about people that have already moved forward, they're moving forward on, and you've already had a short sale. Thank God for Google and their search engines, because you can, you know, when people are listening, probably say, well, I already know about this program or that program. But there's just so much out there, and it's very inundating. Basically, the rules were stating that you have to wait 2 to 3 to 4 years to be able to buy a home. And now there's a back-to-work program that is under FHA, that just a Federal Housing Administration just recently implemented. Oh, my gosh, Randy, did you hear what I said? My words are, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm tongue-tied. Okay, Natalie, slow down. So they just implemented recently the back-to-work program. Under extenuating circumstances, you may still be able to buy a home now after 1 year, okay? Mm. So that's really exciting, because a lot of the lenders, even the small savings and loans, which usually I'm real pro going to savings and loans these days, because the smaller banks, because they seem to be back to the basics. They can do things that some of the larger companies can't. But even the smaller ones are ending up sticking to 2, 3, 4 years, and many want 20% down, which is hard for people to come up with when they're starting over. VA, veteran, if you're a veteran, it's 2 years. But this program that FHA just started, the 1 year under extenuating circumstances, has requirements, and you can actually go on and get the back-to-work program. Go to back-to-work program, .org has different things, or you can go straight to the sites. It's a HUD-approved program. You can go to HUD.gov to get more information. Basic program qualifications. Even if you had a foreclosure, short sale, deed in lieu of foreclosure, or bankruptcy, you may still qualify under these if you had extenuating circumstances. So you must have had a financial hardship in the past, but now can document that you are paying all your bills, because so you need to have good credit for the past 12 years. You don't want to have any 30-day lates, shouldn't have any rental lates. You have to, you know, be able to show that you've reestablished a responsible credit history. And basically, you know, when people are going through these things, you know, it's terrible at the time, and then you get back on your feet and you start, you know, paying your bills like you had before. So you're going to be able to show a good history. And there's also the other, you know, grief can go with it. You know, many different things. So you may have taken a while to get yourself back on track, but you need to be back on track at least 1 year. And after the 1 year, then you're, you know. So if you know you have a bunch of 30-day lates, then get yourself going and get yourself back on track. You have to be able to document your problems resulted from a financial hardship. So if you can show you lost your job, or sometimes people been in accidents, they couldn't work, didn't have disability insurance, didn't have any other forms of income, you know, you want to be able to document it. So it can't be just a situation where somebody just decided to get out of it. You know, maybe they were upside down and just decided to walk away. You need to be able to document that this was a hardship. Then you have to complete a HUD-approved housing. I can't talk today, Randy. You have to complete a HUD-approved housing counseling session and program. And you'll get a certificate once you've completed that program. So the way to get started, basically, in that is to definitely contact a lender that does FHA loans and ask them about the Back to Work program. You can also go to HUD.gov and see how you can get started on getting a certificate so that you can go ahead and take the class so that you can do that. Of course, that's just because they want you to be educated and know what you're getting into and what's happened. So it's kind of like a pre-purchase counseling setup. It's definitely worth it to get back into the buying mode if you can, because the interest rates are still very low. So it's always worth it to own versus rent if you can get in for cheaper than you can rent as well.
So the interest rates are still fairly low, huh?
Yeah, they're still very, very low. I mean, they're still, you know, running 4-4.5%. Well, it just depends, but on the, you know, there's so many different programs, but they're very, very low. So it's still a good thing to jump into, definitely, absolutely. And with FHA, you can get in with as little as 3.5% down, where most of the other loans are going to be 10-20+% down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the only thing is with FHA now, they brought back the old rules where you have to pay your the mortgage insurance. It's a premium, mortgage insurance premium, and it's a lot higher because before some of the fees are higher because I guess they're trying to recoup some of the monies that were lost all these years. In addition to that, you pay that for the life of the loan. So if you want to get rid of it, you would have to refinance your loan. They had stopped that back in the late 90s, and if you had at least 20% into your loan, you could get that waived, but not anymore, not on the FHA. So the old rules are back. So still dig in and check into everything, but this is still a good program to get in because, you know, something to think about. We've been so spoiled with our rates, and they've gone down, I mean, 2, 3%. I mean, I've been in 29 years, and it's just amazing to me how low the rates have been, and now you're running around 4.5-5. Depending on what you do, you can buy down the rate. If the rates go back up to 7-8%, which could happen, they were running in the early 90s, were 9.5%, and then started going down to 8.5%, and stayed there for quite a long time. We got really spoiled after 2000, majorly spoiled. So if the rates go to 8.5-9%, that's double what you can get in for now. So even if you're paying a little bit more in some other cost, it may be worth it, you know. So it's something to look at.
Wow.
And we always want to brighten people's day because so many times people say, well, I can't do that again. It's not going to work. It doesn't make sense. You and I have talked about times where it may make sense renting versus buying because of situations or where people are going. Or, you know, if I travel and I'm traveling to another area, I may temporarily rent, right? You know, it's just but this is definitely, this show today is geared on getting you back out there, getting you back in the game if you just had a short sale. And it does include, of course, foreclosure, bankruptcy, deed in lieu, et cetera. But, so it's pretty good news, actually, because, you know, everybody has a right to start over and everybody has a right to get in and get back in and not be penalized indefinitely. So,
And I've heard that the short sale is much better on your credit than a foreclosure. Is that still true? Is that still pretty much true by and large?
It is true by and large because a short sale is going to lower your credit. It's going to lower your score less than a foreclosure. But overall, they're all going to, you know, it's going to lower your score less than hurt your credit less than a foreclosure.
Yeah.
But with everything that's gone on, I mean, it's not. The thing with the foreclosure is you have to talk to a tax attorney and an accountant because I'd be careful and make sure that the attorney does know the tax ramifications. Now with short sales, now with some of the laws not being extended, it's kind of hurting the short sale market. So I'm hoping they are going to extend some of these other laws and come up with some other tax breaks for people that have gone through short sales. Before, if you had a short sale and say it was your principal resident and you could get a waiver of the 1099, not having to pay taxes on the loss, you wouldn't have been able to do that in the foreclosure, but you could possibly on the other way. So there's just so much. There's so much to get into, and also to see what somebody's individual circumstances are. So definitely, if you start paying your bills on time, you know, you may have a bad taste in your mouth, be disgusted what you went through. You've worked so hard for years, and then you had to go through a short sale because you lost a job or maybe something else happened. You could have been going through a divorce. It could be – there's a host of reasons, and only you know that, what the reasons are. But what happens is we can tend to get stuck in our funk and stuck in that, you know, that being upset that it happened, you know, and we're human. It's not a big deal, but it seems like a certainly big deal at the time. I mean, there's people that actually, you know, lost their lives because of it because they couldn't handle it, right? So I'm not lessening at all how bad it can be to somebody, but it's not on the outside, when it's starting over, it's not. And the big thing is to try to get back into taking your steps, taking the bull by the horn, and step through it. And this is just good news that the government and FHA is saying, hey, wait a minute, this is really – a lot of these people aren't able to get back in. We need to start some other programs to help them get back in. You know, these people were working hard, trying, had the American dream in, you know, mind, and then couldn't do it. Now, there's many cases where I've heard people in certain states said, I'm getting out of here, and then they went and bought a cheaper house, and they had a game plan, which I don't agree with doing – you know, they had no intentions of keeping the house, right? There are different situations where people were doing things differently than if somebody really went through a major hardship, you know. Once houses were upside down, you had a lot of people walking away from them, whether they had a hardship or not, because they just didn't like the fact that the equity wasn't there. But that's more the exception. Many people got hurt through this in the last 10 years? Starting 10 years. Yeah. Really the last six. Yeah, so... definitely, there's options and there's ways to do this. Now, conventional, they're saying 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You'd want to talk to different local lenders. In-house, the smaller banks can make exceptions, so you want to talk to them as well. So that's pretty much.
Well, you know, as you were describing the again, people's different reactions to, you know, that situation and. And I've talked about this. You know, we've been in this situation before, and it's kind of like, and this sort of is a prelude to our second half, as always. But it goes to kind of personal growth, personal healing, And, you know, what you attach to what's going on, right? And I think sometimes because of, you know, our backgrounds and what we've been through, we attach, right? And in my case, where I was emotionally, physically abused, everything was my fault. And so when I went through, you know, that time where we were facing foreclosure and we miraculously were able to keep our house, and don't have time to go into that here, but I remember that I got into that spiral you're talking about, that funk of, here I go again, it's my fault, I'm bad, you know, here's another example. And then you get spiraling and you've attached that. And that's where the personal healing stuff, and that's why we do both sides of this show, right? Because it does kind of overlap, doesn't it? I mean, the way people face a short sale or a potential foreclosure really depends on their journey, what they've been through.
The older I get, the older I get, Randy, and life and experiences and everything, the more I think your attitude, your mindset, how you feel about things has to do with everything. It's got to do with everything. It has to do with everything, right? It has to do with getting you up out of bed in the day. You know what it means? Like it has to do with how you handle things, how you attack things. And nobody, you know, the sad thing that if I could ever say a message to the world, which I'm not going to get to that way, but, you know, everybody's a miracle. Everybody's wonderful, right? Nobody, we have systems and we have the right way to do things in the sense that you don't want to get in trouble. You have to legally do things. You know, look at McDonald's. A franchise is a perfect example. McDonald's, I don't care where you go in the world, if somebody has a McDonald's franchise, that hamburger's cooked the same amount of seconds, it's flipped the same amount. Now, I take that, some of the Asian places do have the poo-poo platter, so I add that in. But anyhow, the hamburger, the system does not change. Somebody doesn't come in and go, I want to do it this way, this way, this way. So we have to have systems, and you have to have rules and things to abide by, but that doesn't mean that you as an individual doesn't have a right to do things and go through your journey like Randy's talking about. You'll get people that go, oh, shame on you, or oh, how'd that happen to you, or that would never happen to me, or I would never do that. And it's like, let them bite their tongue. Because they don't know what it's like unless they've walked in your shoes. So just don't ignore people like that. Because typically when somebody's making those kind of comments, they haven't been through a lot of experiences. They haven't had a lot of pain because they would never say those types of things. So we just like to point that out because I really believe, I wholeheartedly, that we're working on it's time to heal. And that's like the comment I made about where did the last 5 years go? I just have to look at it like, boom. But it wasn't all bad. You know what I mean? It wasn't all bad. Yeah. But it was just, but it's, when we get in the funk, but so many people are going it. You know, I when the crisis was starting in 2008, I some people said, well, particular person saying to me, well, I don't think anything's going to happen. It's not going to be that bad. And I said, we've got to help, too, with our programs because people are going to be killing themselves. Oh, they are not. And within, like, a week, a woman killed herself up in New York. I remember hearing on the news because the foreclosure was set for a certain time in the day, and she did it a couple hours before. And it's just like, that should not happen. That should not happen. You know, because everybody's wonderful. Everybody goes through stuff. Now, there's people that maybe go the other way and take advantage, and they're doing things that are really wrong, you know, like really, really not ethical, et cetera. That's a different story. Yeah. We're not talking about people that live their life saying, hey, I'm just going to, you know, cheat the system or beat the bull or but whatever. But no, really, you're wonderful. If anyone's listening that's on this, right, we have so many archive listeners, but if you're listening to this right now or later and you've gone through hardships and and you've gone through the short sales, you've gone through that, you're wonderful. It doesn't change who you are as a person, so don't take it so personally. And that's easier said than done because you're going to right now, but just remember there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's a future. I mean, when my brother died 2 years ago in January, I couldn't see anything, remember? It was just like, I did it. I functioned. I worked, but I was like, I don't care if I live or not. It was a terrible thing to say, but the way he died and what happened was totally inexcusable in my book, and I just felt so bad because I knew things were going on, and I didn't we won't go into that now, but I'm just saying, I know firsthand what it can be like if you go, I can't move forward. I can't, right? Yeah, but you know what? You can, and time heals. Time heals everything as far as getting us back to what we need to do. So if you've gone through this, you know, short sale, foreclosure, deed in lieu, whatever, bankruptcy, and you're really feeling bad about it, don't just start moving forward. Start doing the basics, and It's pretty cool that you can get a house in a year if once you get it straight, or even 2-3 years. You know how fast that is? What, 365 days in a year? It flies by, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We just want to go through and bringing it around. We're always wrapping it back around to our second half too, but that's who we are though. That's who we are, and that's what we believe in, and right, and we care, and we don't do it haphazardly. There's a reason that we. That we've done the show the way we do the show. It's something that we meant to do. We plan to do it this way so that we're bringing in self-help issues and other issues because it's all part of life, right? It's not totally separated, you know.
No,
so,
and that's why
there
you know,
we go.
Again, we talked about this, you know, when we began the show a couple of years ago, was the idea of, you know, as a real estate agent, you get so involved in people's lives and you literally in some very real sense become a life coach to a lot of families and a lot of people, because when you're dealing with their finances, you begin to find out, well, so what's going on and why, and I'm sure people begin to share. And so as we kind of began this show, it was all about that concept of soul selling, you know, of selling, you know, with soul for a higher purpose, you know, and I know that's what you do and why you do it, and that's exactly why we kind of wrap around. Usually every topic every week somehow comes back in some sense to a personal growth, personal healing conversation. And the second half of the show is we do that with inspiration and motivation, and we've had an amazing, amazing parade of guests on in the second half. And and we've got, of course, coming up here in the second half, Erica McNeil. And again, the phone number is 347-945-5428. If you'd like to call in on this portion of the show coming up, you may have a story or a question. Maybe you're going through a grieving process and you want to talk to Erica about that. I'm no doubt she's open to sharing with you kind of some of her journey. Again, Erica McNeil is her name. And as we said before, she is a 3-time cancer survivor and has lost 7 children, and that's mind-boggling. She's written a book called Good Grief to help people process grief and to move on and help teach people how to love each other. And so we're going to take a time out here real quick, and we're going to be back on the other side. And again, any questions you have for Natalie regarding this first half of the show, as always, radio@realtyuniversal.com. And again, check out realtyuniversal.com for literally, I can say this, everything you need to know. Well, not everything, but a lot of what you need to know about buying, selling, and all of that good stuff. It's all right there. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Erica McNeil on the other side. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Michael Hyatt, professional blogger and public speaker. I'm also the chairman of Thomas Nelson Publishers, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and a Sunday school teacher. I often get asked, how do you get it all done? 2 words, life plan. Sadly, I've met very few people who have a plan for their life. Most are passive spectators, watching their lives unfold one day at a time. They may plan their careers, the building of a new home, or even a vacation, but it never occurs to them to plan their life. This is why so many people end up discouraged, disillusioned, and wondering what went wrong. The good news is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can live your life on purpose starting today by going to michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan. There's 3 reasons why you need a life plan. Number 1, it will give you clarity about where your life is headed. Number 2, it'll keep you in balance when things get crazy. Number 3, it'll give you peace of mind knowing that you're addressing those aspects of your life that matter the most. Creating your personal life plan is not so much an ebook as it is a life planning experience. In the book, I'll take you through a visualization exercise that will give you enormous clarity on what matters most. A 5-step program for identifying where you are now and how to get from here to where you want to be. A weekly and quarterly process for keeping your life on plan and moving in the direction of your highest priorities. 2 planning templates, a Word document, and a separate Excel document that will make it easier for you to create your plan and keep it up to date. You can't buy creating a personal life plan in a bookstore. You can't even buy it on the internet. There's only one way to get it, by subscribing to my free email newsletter. All you need to do is go to michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan and sign up for my free email updates. I'll then immediately email you the download link to this amazing free resource. Don't wait. You can start the life plan adventure today. Experience the power of living your life on purpose.
Wow, thank you, sir. Michael Hyatt, of course, the man, the myth, the legend of living on purpose. And, man, I absolutely big fan of his. Follow him on Twitter and everywhere, so I know a lot of y'all do as well. Randy Zachary, my name, and welcome back to the second half of the show. Again, RealtyUniversal.com, Natalie Mullenick's website. Natalie is the founder, president of Realty Universal. And our program, first half of the show, always about real estate, and it somehow seems to always tie into the topic at hand. And today, no doubt, no different. Erica McNeil is joining us, and this is an amazing, amazing story, and obviously we don't have time for the whole story, but we're going to get into kind of an overview and then really dive into some of her processes and techniques and methods and things that she's done to process her grief. But she is the author of a book, and it's called, actually two books, called Good Grief and The Staycation Jar. She's a three-time cancer survivor, has experienced the loss or death of seven children. Erica is passionate about not wasting her cancer or her child loss by helping to equip men and women to effectively help and love others who are hurting. And Erica, wow, welcome to the show.
Wow.
Thank you so much. Is this where I say hola or aloha?
You can say whichever. Yeah, aloha amigos. There we go.
Aloha amigos. There we go.
We get everybody. We get everybody. She was listening, Natalie. She was listening.
Oh, my goodness.
I was. Awesome.
Wow. Now, you are located where?
We are currently in Birmingham, Alabama. My husband is a military pilot, and so we get to travel a lot.
Oh, wow.
And see our beautiful world.
Fun.
Very, very, very cool. Well, okay, so ericamcneil.com is the website. Let's get that out there, and we'll keep kind of peppering the conversation with that, because we want people to go to your website, ericamcneil.com. And we've got lots of questions, and we obviously are going to run out of time with you, because this is powerful. And I know you've hit on a nerve here, and why things are kind of exploding for you. And why don't you kind of give us a brief overview of the story? We really obviously don't have time for the whole thing. Maybe at another point we might circle back and dig in a little deeper with the story. But how about kind of a short version of your story?
Not too short.
Definitely. not too short. Well, I was first diagnosed with cancer in 1999. I was a senior in college, and I was 22 years old.
Wow.
And at that time, it was such a rare cancer that the doctors had never even heard of it. And after doing research, they found that it had only been found in men over the age of 80. And so talk about feeling a little bit alone, you know, in the process. And they had to figure out how to do the treatment. And once they finished treatment, they told me that if the cancer ever came back, I could only have 2 months left to live, because they thought it would come back very aggressive. So 4.5 years later, I was now married to the man of my dreams, Todd, and my cancer came back actually while he was deployed in the Middle East. And he wasn't supposed to be home for 3 months. And so I called him up and told him what was going on, and thinking I only had weeks left to live, he came home, and I went through treatment, and at that point we learned the cancer was not likely as aggressive as once was believed 4.5 years prior. And so I went into remission, and we had our first daughter, Jordan, a couple of years later, who is just a true miracle in every sense of the word. We really don't know how she exists, but it's just God's continuous grace in our lives. And 17 months later, we had our daughter, Kylie, who was born very premature at 22 and a half weeks gestation, and she lived for about 80 minutes. And and what was amazing about God's grace again in that moment was that he taught us that whether one lives for 80 minutes or lives for 80 years, life is just such a breath. And we just need to be so cautious of how we're living each of these breaths. About a year later, we miscarried and decided to pursue adoption. And 6 months after we made that phone call to the adoption agency, we were coming home from the hospital, bringing home our little guy that we named Joshua Todd. And we were just so enamored and in love with this little guy. And 24 hours later, we heard the words we had been fearing the entire adoption process was the adoption agency called us and said, she wants him back. And the birth mom had decided to go ahead and parent and revoke the adoption plan. And so Todd and I were crushed, absolutely crushed. And so we decided to go to our happy place, Hawaii, and start our grieving process out there. I mean, there's really no better place to do that. And we tell people occasionally that we threw caution to the trade winds out there and ended up becoming pregnant with twins.
Wow.
Yeah. And so another moment in our lives where we just saw God at work in our lives and how personal and detailed he is was in this circumstance. I ended up miscarrying those babies. And but the day that I miscarried them, our now adopted son was born that same day.
Wow.
And that just showed us that nothing, absolutely nothing goes unnoticed by God. And so about 2 weeks after we finalized his adoption, my cancer came back. And this time the doctors actually knew what it was, what was going on, and this doctor, his wife actually had the same cancer. It was just unreal. And they decided to go straight to chemotherapy. And I ended up having an anaphylactic reaction to the chemo, and it almost killed me, actually. We found out later that the chemo was constructed with mice antibodies and that I was allergic to mice.
So, who would ever think? What type of cancer, what type of cancer did you have?
It's called mucosa-associated lymphoid tissue. It's a type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so 1% of the population is allergic to mice. Less than that end up having to have any kind of medicine that has mice antibodies, and it happened to be me. But again, here it comes back to God constantly, that one dose of chemo, which should have eradicated me, totally and completely eradicated the cancer.
Really?
And
God bless God. Wow.
Yeah. I have been in remission for 3.5 years now from that one dose of chemo.
Congratulations.
So as the saga continues, just last year we ended up bringing home two sisters from our local foster care system because we felt God was calling us to be open to adoption again and to provide a home for more children. And we were a family of six for about 4 months before that adoption failed. And as heartbreaking as it was to go through that, we can look back and truly believe that God never really intended us to be their forever family, but to take them out of a difficult situation and uncover a lot of medical needs that they had in order to set the right family up for success. And we actually just found out a couple of weeks ago that they have finalized their adoption in their new family. And I do think that God used us in their lives to help get that family together. So that's my story.
Well, you know, and what I'm struck with, wow, is when you said that, you know, that you were, you know, you guys were being used to kind of set up the next family, I think that is often when tragedy strikes us, we, you know, why God? Why? Why me? Why God?
Mm-hmm.
And it's our need to kind of be in control, frankly.
Sure.
And to the degree that we can literally, like you've done, in a healthy way, go, you know what? All things do work together for good. And this is, yes, this is painful. Mm-hmm. Don't understand it. I'm not
right.
God. You are. I'm going to let you
right.
be. Let you be God. And anyway, I can preach on that, and I don't want to take your time.
I want to ask a quick question. You said there's six of you now. Six of you, but you had, so there's six of you?
Well, we were a family of six before the adoption failed with the girls.
So a family of four.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure to play. Yeah. Wow. So go ahead. That's an amazing story.
Well, Randy, I love how you talk about, I mean, the why not or why me question.
Yeah.
We've been asked that a lot, and actually, that's one of the chapters in my book is actually entitled "Why Not Me," and that was the attitude I took when I was first diagnosed with cancer. And on the one hand, because I was so young, I still had I had no attachments to the world as far as a family and everything. And so I was very free, and I could understand when Paul said, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. I could understand that, you know, in that moment. And so when people would say, why you, what have you done to deserve this? My response would be, well, why not me? Like, I've not done anything to make me immune to cancer. You know, now later, I've not done anything to make me immune to child loss. And if you take it back to the cross, you see that God did not just allow Jesus to die. He allowed Jesus to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't expect to be any different.
Yeah. There you go. Wow. Well put, and I love that you take it back to the cross because, you know, and I've always found, you know, as Monica and I have done our marriage stuff over the years, this saying to be really true, that the place, much like the cross, the place of our greatest pain has become the place of our greatest victory. And so there, yes, there is suffering, but that pain, whatever that is, can become the place of your greatest victory if you allow the healing process and allow the Lord into those places. And I think so many people, especially in your situation, would be bitter, angry. You know, there's that, you know, you've got the enemy, you've got people, you know, all around you. You almost feel like you have a right, especially given your story, to be bitter or angry. And was there periods of time where you felt that and had to let the Lord kind of take that? I mean, were there seasons in and through your story where you were angry, were bitter, were, you know, frustrated?
Absolutely. The second time I was diagnosed with cancer, I had a very different reaction than my first. I was now married to Todd and had started this amazing marriage with this man who I adored, and I didn't want to leave him. And heaven no longer was something in my eyes to be gained, but a threat. And I had to work through those emotions. And I would say, even in everything we had been through, probably JT's failed adoption was where we hit our crisis of belief, our crisis of faith, a crisis of everything we had believed about God and what he was doing in our lives, and all of it just came to head. And both Todd and I, while we had some similar reactions, we also had very differing reactions that included bitterness and anger and frustration and just a total broken and contrite spirit of not understanding why it had to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, obviously a natural, there are phases, and I'm sure in your book, I'm sure you kind of go through some of those phases and recount yours. But what is the, and by the way, again, the book is amazing. It's called Good Grief. And she's also written a book called The Staycation Jar. Our guest, Erica McNeil, is with us for just a few more minutes. I knew this would fly by. The number 347-945-5428 if you are listening live. Love to hear from you, and absolutely you can chime in if you, especially if maybe you're in that space and need, you know, need to ask a question. We can pray with you. Happy to do any of the above. Again, 347-945-5428. So let's. I've got a few questions that I've kind of jotted down here as I'm listening. And what would you say is the most important thing to remember when dealing with grief?
Well, I think Natalie touched on it a little bit earlier when she mentioned about how grief changes people. And I think grief is also very, very unpredictable. We aren't the people that we were before the crisis hit. And a lot of people would comment to us, when are you going to get back to normal?
Mm.
And my response to them, I would say, well, one, who said I was ever normal to begin with? I mean, that's a stretch. And two, I am no longer the person I was before burying my daughter. I have a new identity now as a bereaved mama. Going to take me some time to learn how to function in this new identity.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, you're not the same. You're right. And it's changed you. And again, there's that process. Again, that word process keeps coming up because I know it is. Now, and this is always weird, and I know this is a big kind of mission of yours, is to help people love people through situations like this, because we all, you know, often well-meaning, more often than not, say things, ask things, try and comfort, encourage. What are some things that people have said and done in your life and in your process that were helpful?
The people who were most helpful for us were the people who remained very consistent and loving throughout the entire process of our grieving journey. There were some people who would come in and out as they remembered or as it was convenient for them. And it was difficult for those people to really understand the moments of venting when we just needed to get things out and say things that we may not mean versus the way we truly felt and the condition of our heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's heavy. That's really big because you need to vent, you need to talk, and people don't understand it, do they? Sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was also very helpful to have people who told us to take our time to grieve.
Yep.
That did not diminish or minimize what we were going through. Mm-hmm. And those people who didn't feel that need to over-spiritualize our circumstances.
Oh, man. Oh, don't get me started. the dreaded Bible Band-Aids, you know.
I deal with a few of those in good grief.
well-meaning people that bust out the big book and start whooping you with it, you know. And I know they mean well. Well, brother, haven't you read James? And you know, like, whoa, whoa, you know. I know, boy, and I know people might freak out when we say that, but There's a time and a place. I think we all know, you know, if we've been Christians, we know what the Bible says. And there is a place for encouraging with the Bible. I'm not saying the word, it is alive, it is powerful and all that. Mm-hmm. But you're right, huh? It's difficult when folks would. So you deal with that in one of your chapters, huh?
I do.
I
sometimes call it First Opinions 1:1. God will give you more than you can handle. I do talk about that one. Jeremiah 29:11 is how that is often taken out of context. And just other Christian cliches and platitudes that I try to help people understand from the perspective of the person who's grieving why sometimes those words can actually hinder a person's process instead of healing like they're trying to do. And then what to say instead.
I had one of my best friends 2 weeks after my brother died tragically the way it was and said to me, get over it, Natalie. I cried about my mother who died when I was 11 every night for a year. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, sometimes people mean well, but they're saying the worst thing that they could, you know. It's like, I was like, I didn't call her back for like a week and a half. What's wrong with you, Natalie? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm sorry. I just couldn't get over it. You know, and then she knew she hurt me, you know. But go ahead. I'm just throwing that out there because people don't realize, and it's really difficult. It's really hard.
Yeah. And when you're in the moment, that's not always the most appropriate time to say something was hurtful. You're most likely trying to refrain from saying anything at all. And so often people don't know that these things that you've been saying for years and years and years are very painful because no one has ever told them. And, you know, by the time years have gone by, it just becomes kind of swept under the rug and you keep saying the same things over and over. And that became a lot of what compelled me to write the book was, okay, let's deal with this and let's talk about this so that we can, as a community, help people grieve appropriately. And here's kind of a resource guide of what not to say and what to say instead and how to tangibly provide support.
Cool. And that's in
the
book.
Wow, that's so needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So needed.
Oh, my goodness. Hey.
Because the worst thing you can do in grief is isolate, but you want to isolate if people keep telling you, oh, my gosh, you're going to keep saying that over and over and over and over and over and over. You know what I mean? Because But you need to say it because you need to vent. You need to talk about it. It's so important to be able to have the say, to be able to do that. So, I can't wait to read your book. And I think a lot of people out there can really learn from you.
Thank you.
Erica McNeil is with us again. Her book, Good Grief, is the book that we're talking about. She's also written The Staycation Jar. Find out all about her at ericamcneil.com, ericamcneil.com. And I have some other questions, but I want to, if we can, drill down on something you just said because that Jeremiah 29:11, you said it's often taken out of context. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes. Actually, what happened with how I learned how much that verse was taken out of context, is with JT. So many people told us over and over again that this must have been God's plan for you. This must have been God's plan for her. This is just what God wanted. It was His will. And Jeremiah 29:11 us until we didn't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it actually took my husband to the brinking point of, if this is God's plan for our lives, then I want nothing to do with God.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah.
And
right.
that was so hard for me as a wife to watch my husband, who was raised in the church, godly man, struggle through. And I went back to Jeremiah 29:11, which everyone had been saying, and dove into the original language and tried to understand and read commentaries and tried to really figure out what does this mean? And the verse is actually about the restoration of Israel. It is a promise for Israel, and it is about the coming of Jesus Christ and the restored relationship as He dies on the cross and is buried and resurrected, that now God can have a personal relationship with us. And it is not about God giving us all these plans and or having this detailed map of our lives and planning every triumph and tragedy in our life with the expectation of giving us a great life. You know, God's desire for us is to be holy, to be like Him, and not simply to be a happy Christian.
Wow. So, and for those of you unfamiliar, let me just read the verse. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And, you know, wow. I know that is like a plaque in every Christian bookstore in the country that, you know, that everybody like puts in their home. And you know what? We've because it's the Word of God and it's alive, we do get comfort from it. There's no doubt about it. But in that, you know, in your situation, I can just so empathize with your husband there because, I mean, you know, how can you say that when you're in that place? And guess what? And that kind of, what's the word I want? Your statement and your taking that to task and bringing that into clarity really kind of as well, frankly, kind of speaks to the whole prosperity gospel, the whole idea of, you know, future and a hope no matter what. Well, guess what? What about you know, the Hall of Fame of Faith and, you know, where they were sawed in two and they were imprisoned and they were, you know, beheaded? not exactly a hope and a future that they would call, you know, and oh, by the way, they were harmed.
You know, right.
You can't deny they were harmed. So we could do, you know what I would love to do with you and me and some others is to get on a whole hour on this verse and just invite
you. Oh, absolutely. I agree.
Because,
let's do it.
Oh, my
let's
gosh,
do it.
This would be fun because it's,
Yeah, and Randy, what's interesting to note about the original text is the word plans is not in the original Hebraic text. It actually is, I know the thoughts that I think toward you, the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil to give you an expected end. So there's a whole new can of worms.
Wow.
Wow, that's good stuff, man. So we just been to Bible college today. Yeah.
You should do an expert, another book, a smaller book on what to and to not say. You know, just pull it out of your book. And because that could be, people need to know, because it happens all the time. And a lot of people really honestly want to help, but they just don't realize they're putting their foot in their mouth and they're hurting, you know. So.
Absolutely.
So we've got, like I say, with Erica McNeil is our guest, and we've got literally like 3 minutes. So I would like to get one more question, and that is, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I'd love you to kind of share as we wrap up, what compelled you to write the book, Good Grief?
Well, again, I was finding that a lot of people were asking me questions on my website and Facebook, asking, what do I do? What do I say, you know, in these circumstances? And I was learning that there is such a disparity between people who are hurting that don't know what they need in that moment of crisis and their loved ones who want so desperately to help but don't know what to do. And so I wanted to try and help bridge that gap and give and offer tangible suggestions of what not to say and why. Like, here's the perspective of the grieving of why this hurts to hear, but then to take it a step further of here's what to say instead and words that can bring healing and create conversations with your loved ones so that you can get to the heart of their grieving process. And then also just tangible solutions of what to do. A lot of people will say, you know, when tragedy hits, they'll say, well, what do you need? What can I do? And the person will say, well, I don't know. And then call if you need anything. Do you ever receive a phone call? No. Because people don't know what they need. And so trying to help people learn how to anticipate what those needs are.
Quickly, 60-second answer. I do want to get to this question. What would you say if somebody's listening to this archive right now and they're in the grieving process? What would you, kind of a 60-second parting shot, what would you say to them?
I would say grieve on your own timeline and grieve as long as it takes. There's no magic number of weeks or months or years where grief automatically comes to an end. Again, we're not the same people that we were before the crisis, and we've changed and we're different. And so our lives are going to be different. But I also think that in that there's a lot of hope. And when we trust in God to mend those broken pieces, to mend our deepest hurts, God is going to bring healing to you. And also, when you are ready, he can also use what you have gone through to help someone else who's gone through something similar.
There it is.
Amen.
There it is. That place of your greatest pain can become the place of your greatest healing. And I know that's powerful. Erica McNeil, ericamcneil.com is her website. And go there. Just a lot of resources. Her other book, Staycation Jar. And we're working on a... working on a conference, and I think we would love to have you involved in that because you've really hit a nerve, and we're big proponents of healing. And thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Erica. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Natalie.
God bless you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.